Because I actually don't understand whether this notion of tensor network that I'm going to present is useful. I would be very interested in getting feedback. So this is joint work with my supervisor, Janet Hung, based on previous work with Will Donnelly. So apologies to people who have seen this talk before, but I want to begin by just saying general things about a quantum field theory. So usually we start by learning about the path integral. And path integral gives us things like correlation functions, topological invariants, and also replicatory calculations of entanglement entropy. But what it does not give us is a notion of local Hilbert space factorization. It doesn't tell us how to take a spatial slice and then break it up into little pieces and define a local Hilbert space there and define our global Hilbert space as a tensor product. If we're interested in, say, anything about entanglement or teleportation or just even how to draw this kind of diagram for a continuum field theory, then this seems to be a problem. How do we define such protocols? So just to say a word about the kind of non-triviality of defining a locality in field theory, my favorite example is, this is an example to illustrate that given a Hilbert space, you're not given a canonical choice of what you mean by locality, what you mean by local tensor product. For example, this is a free fermion Hilbert space. It's made of wave functions that are n-asymmetric. The simplest notion of locality is to put n fermions on a circle with coordinate z. But there's another notion of locality. This Hilbert space is exactly the same as the Hilbert space of Yang-Mills, U and Yang-Mills on a spatial circle quantized by x rather than z. This x is the x that appears here in the gauge field, in the local gauge field. And u, the holonomy, is the configuration variable. These z's, rather than being a spatial coordinate, are actually, in some sense, the eigenvalues of u. And a more exotic example in related to ADS-CFT, this is a theory. I don't have to say particularly what a theory is. I just want to say that in this theory, there's a conformal field theory that has a sector made of free fermions in a magnetic field in the lowest Landau level, which are described by these droplet configurations. So there seems to be a free fermion Hilbert space, but we know that this Hilbert space is due to a 10-dimensional geometry in type 2B supergravity, and that's a completely different 10-dimensional notion of locality. So how do we solve this problem of non-factorization? Well, the solution that I know best comes from gauge theory. In the case of gauge theory, there's an obvious obstruction to tensor product factorization. The gauge invariant degrees of freedom are circles, are Wilson lines, Wilson loops, sorry. And if I partition space into V and V bar, I'll necessarily cut these Wilson loops into Wilson lines. So I can't factorize my physical Hilbert space. The best I can do is take my entangling surface and split it into two parts and allow for a larger Hilbert space. Here in HV and HV bar, I've allowed for these endpoints of open strings to end on the entangling surface. So that represents a charge that transforms non-trivially and violates Gauss' law. That's okay. We'll allow a small violation of Gauss' law at the boundary, and that leads to so-called edge nodes that live on these boundaries that transform under the gauge group that is restricted to this boundary, which I call G times G bar. And then once I allow for this larger Hilbert space, I have to now restrict to a physical subsector that satisfies Gauss' law, and it'll look like an equation like this, where J and J bar are the generators of G and G bar. And if I restrict to states that satisfy this condition, I recover my original Hilbert space. Now, this equation can be viewed as an equivalence relation. If I put one, this J on the other side. And in this point of view, we have something like that was called an entangling product. The entangling product is saying that sort of the opposite of this equation, we're saying that suppose I start with HV times HV bar, which is a regular tensor product. I can fuse them together. That's what this subscript G means. By taking the quotient using Gauss' law, I can fuse them together to recover my physical Hilbert space. And so the Hilbert space does factorize if I enlarge it, if I embed it inside this larger Hilbert space, and then I can trace out 1/2 and talk about reduced density matrices and entanglement. Now, so I described in that previous slide some enlargement of my Hilbert space. You might ask whether this is arbitrary. Is there a constraints that this extension has to satisfy? So we showed that this notion of Hilbert space extension actually can be formulated as part of the data of an extended topological quantum field theory. And I'll get to a moment what that extended QFT is, but the key insight is that in the previous slide, we talked about the fusion of two intervals, say, along a point. So this is one dimension lower version of what I said in the last slide. But we described it in a fixed moment of time on a spatial slice. But now I want to imagine that this is a process. It's a process that takes two intervals and glues them into one in a Euclidean space-time process. So this thing is called a cobordism. And naturally, a cobordism, it really is sort of a linear map between these spaces. So it really is like a tensor, except that it's infinite dimensional. And once I describe the fusion process in terms of a cobordism, this object now belongs to the universe of extended quantum field theory that was defined by these mathematicians. And the idea is very simple. We want to define a quantum field theory via the path integral, but without mentioning functional integration, because that's a difficult thing mathematically to deal with. So instead, we think about it slightly differently. We consider, say, a path integral on a full closed surface, and we want to study it by cutting it into smaller pieces and study the basic components I get when I do this cutting. So if I take a torus and cut along circles, I find a hemisphere and I find a pair of pants, a closed-ring pair of pants. In the original formulation, these sort of basic objects, this pair of pants and the cap, are the basic components which I can glue together to make an arbitrary surface. So if you tell me what those basic cobordisms are, I can reconstruct the path integral on any surface I want. The word extended here means that why not keep cutting? Instead of stopping my cutting at the circle, I can take the circle and then cut along a point. If I view that as a cobordism, that's a transition from a closed string into an open string. I can also cut an interval in the same way, and then I can now open up an arbitrary manifold in terms of these basic cobordisms. So I want to say more precisely, More precisely, what this formalism of an extended quantum field theory is, and I'll stick to in this talk always in two dimensions, and for this slide, just topological quantum field theories, where this is the most well-defined. Rather than thinking about the path integral as a functional integral, I'm just going to think that it's a rule. The path integral is a rule that assigns to some geometric objects, some objects in the category of vector spaces. So for example, a circle is assigned to the Hilbert space of a circle. A manifold that interpolates between circles is assigned to a linear map between the Hilbert spaces of the circles in the initial slice and the Hilbert space of the circle of the final slice. A surface that has only one boundary in the final slice. So I'm reading these diagrams from up to down. This is assigned to a state because it's a map from the empty set into a set. So that's just a choice of an element. And the important thing is that you can glue together these cobordisms, and gluing corresponds to composition. Now, that's the definition of the closed TQFT. The extension, what I mean by extension in this language, is to allow for boundaries. So now, interval with boundaries is allowed as my geometric object, and it has to assign to a Hilbert space that has labels. The labels are labeling boundary conditions. I can consider cobordisms of intervals, but there's a rule now that these labels have to match whenever the boundary of the open string connects. This again is a linear map. And again, I want to think about this as really a tensor. It's just a three-index tensor, but the tensor in principle can run over infinite dimensional Hilbert space. Any questions so far? So we I started by saying that we wanted to find some constraints on our extension of the Hilbert space. So the constraints that come in this language of extended TQFT are the so-called sewing relations. So again, what we mean by extension is that you give me the assignment of these basic objects, but they're not arbitrary. They have to satisfy rules, and these are the rules they have to satisfy. And you can see they're very topologically motivated. If you take this thing that we call the zipper, and you pull the zipper up, then you get this thing on the right-hand side. I won't say too much about these, but for now, let's just say that there are solutions to this sewing relations, and each solution corresponds to an extended TQFT. What we want to do is to talk about entanglement in the context of this language. And there we have, we discussed earlier a Hilbert space extension where I take an interval Hilbert space and embed it into the Hilbert space of two intervals. So I want to now think about this factorization as one of these extensions, so as a cobordism. And similarly, I can take a state of a circle and embed it into the Hilbert space of an interval. But because we're discussing entanglement, we have to have an additional axiom we call the entanglement brain. What this tells us is that an entangling surface is really not real, it's not physical. So for example, if I consider an interval, I factorize it into two, and then I fuse it back into one, I've created a little hole with the entangling surface. But that entangling surface wasn't really there, it's just our mathematical division. So we should be able to close up that hole into just nothing, this identity. And it just turns out that this particular formulation of that closing up of holes, this left equation combined with these relations, allow you to close up all possible holes in your diagrams. So this is a new definition we're adding to the extended TQFT. And one thing we find that, for example, for gauge theory, this notion of entanglement brain, which is a boundary condition labeled by E, is not actually a single boundary condition. In general, it's a sum. So for example, this diagram where I take this interval with physical boundaries A and C, but now split it into two with entanglement boundaries, you see that it really splits into a sum over the boundary conditions B that live on the inner endpoints here. And this sum over these boundary labels are what we called the edge modes earlier, that we've extended the Hilbert space by allowing this sum over sort of boundary labels.
Yeah. What is this zipper thing?
This zipper is a map that takes the Hilbert space of a circle into the Hilbert space of the interval. And in general, we could have put a real boundary condition there. In that case, it's like a closed string to open string transition. But in our case, this is really just saying that the Hilbert space of a circle can be embedded in the Hilbert space of an interval if I sort of entangle the two endpoints back together to make a circle. Okay, so that was a story in TQFT. What was new about this talk from the previous work was that we wanted to extend this to conformal field theory in two dimensions. And we're gonna call this open-closed conformal field theory, which is a fancy word for just conformal field theory with boundaries. There, the elementary cobordisms come from the OPE coefficients, the operator product expansions of the CFT. So for example, these I've written down these coefficients Cijk. What they are, this, for example, comes from the three-point function of bulk fields, and this comes from the three-point function of boundary fields. And these boundary conditions, A, B, C, are taken to be conformally invariant boundary conditions. So that's the standard story. And back even in the early 90s, Lavellin formulated the analog of the sewing axioms I showed you earlier. Now these diagrams look a bit different because in a CFT, the it's not topological, so the aspect ratios of things matter. So these diagrams are written in terms of giving me a manifold and showing that I can cut them in different ways to get a time slice. So and however I do it, I get the same answer. And as we did with the TQFT, I want to add another axiom to these sewing axioms. I want to say that if we're studying entanglement and these diagrams are really just factorizing my state, then I should have some version of closing up holes. So for example, here's a manifold with a circle with a circular boundary here that was created by entangling surface. It's of size epsilon. And I want to say that if this is really an entangling surface, then if I had inserted operators in the bulk here, in the limit that I shrink this hole to zero size, the correlation functions should not be affected. So the correlation function in the presence of this entanglement boundary should go back to the value when this on the full sphere without the hole, in the limit the epsilon goes to zero. So I'm trying to bring the entire structure I described earlier about entanglement in extended TQFT into the CFT. And so sort of the part of the punchline I wanted to mention is that there's a natural notion of tensor networks that you can get from cobordisms, which, based on our previous discussion in the previous slide, should come from the OPEs. So for example, suppose I do the simplest possible thing with these cobordisms. I take a state on a circle, and then I factorize it. So first, I apply the zipper that turns my state in the circle into a state on an interval. And then I split that interval into two. So I factorize the state on the circle into a state on two intervals. Now, we could do various things with that. We can try to compute the entanglement entropy of the two intervals. But let me not do that for now. I just want to ask, well, why stop the factorization there? I could have keep splitting my intervals. I could go from 2 to 4, 4 to 8, and et cetera. And in fact, in between the splittings, I could have inserted these objects, these 2 to 2 scatterings that looks like a disentangler. And I could have created something that looks like a mirror network. I'm not sure if it really looks like it in this diagram. I was trying very hard to preserve the conformal frame that we're in, because we're in a conformal field theory. We can't just arbitrarily deform things. And the main point I want to make with this is that I basically try to imitate a mirror network by identifying a open string interaction with a coarse graining tensor and a 2-to-2 scattering of open strings with a disentangler. And pictorially, I mean, this is certainly, it seems to have a natural connection. But I want to mention that this E-brain boundary condition is particularly useful, because now I see in this diagram there are holes. Like, there's a hole right here, and there's a hole right here that was created by an entangling surface. But we're allowed to close up those holes. If I close up those holes, it tells me this entire network of tensors was really reproducing exactly my original state, which was the state on the cap. Except that I've dug these little semicircles here to break up the circle into a tensor product of many intervals. So I want to say that if you really keep all of the indices in our infinite dimensional tensor described by the OPEs, we really have not an approximation, but an exact description of our state. The exact description of any state you prepare with a Euclidean path integral. And so this is the sort of tensor network that I am interested in. Yeah.
I got lost. So you have some, let's say, vacuum of shear theory or something?
Yeah.
What's the procedure? I like make some this entangling surface thing, like a little bit?
Yeah, so I could have done it in a different way. So this is just one step where I take a circle and factorize into two intervals. But I could have attached the open string interaction to take this interval into two.
Okay, so if I have, say, 1 plus 1 BCFT, then
yeah.
Make this trick and then make a kind of a factorized Hilbert space between the surfaces. And then from there, we can like construct this mirror-like.
Right. Yeah. So if I only showed you this hemisphere, right, this would be just a normal thing where you use the Hamiltonian of the CFT. You evolve the from the point to the disk, and that evolution prepares the state. I'm saying that we can break up the evolution in a way that looks like Mera. Right here, this is an evolution again. This evolution from the top to the bottom is exactly the evolution from this point here to the bottom to create the state. And I'm saying that creation process can be broken up into little cobordisms.
Yeah. And then the point is that the little holes on the bulk side can be removed.
They can be closed. According to my, if I choose this particular, this E label is precisely the choice of boundary condition, such that all holes can be closed.
Okay. obvious or I don't know?
Well, the content of my talk, so I just gave you sort of the punchline in terms of what I want to present to you and what I want feedback from. And the rest of the talk is me showing that these pictures actually have some precise meaning. And I don't anticipate I can finish my talk, but I wanted to present the punchline first. But this is a good point to ask questions if there are any more. Yeah, Bartek.
What is the knowledge of the bond dimension of the matter?
Well, it's infinite dimensional, isn't it? I was about to talk about the Hilbert space of a CFT. The Hilbert space of a CFT is infinite dimensional.
So each of these bond dimensions is like it contains the whole spectrum of the CFT.
Yes, but it's up to you, right? So I'm saying that if you want it to be exact, uh-huh. That's certainly true. But there's a natural truncation because remember we're evolving by the Hamiltonian of CFT.
Yeah.
So the descendants, so we can look at the low energy states. If we evolve for a long time, then the low energy states would dominate. So it's natural to truncate the spectrum at the primaries and ignore the descendants. I mean, I think there will be a natural way of truncating these tensors.
Where was that time evolution happening on the diagram on the previous slide?
So when I prepare a state, when I say the passing of prepared state, what does that mean? I have a circle where the state is defined, and then I define a manifold that ends on that circle. When I do the path integral on that manifold, I'm preparing the state. So here that manifold is just a hemisphere.
Yeah.
So when I start from a point and I start evolving all the way to the circle, that's like this thing we learn in operator state correspondence. I'm taking a very long cylinder, but the very long cylinder is conformally equivalent to the disk, right? So this long preparation that prepares my state on the circle is the same as the evolution from this point here to this circle. So I'm just saying that the manifold that you choose to put. You could have put in some complicated thing here, like a torus with a hole, right, with a circle. That manifold is a preparation of a state using the Euclidean path integral.
Okay, so at the level of a single tensor, we can do some truncation. Now, is there an interpretation of what a loop is, one of those loops that we close?
Well, this is a...
Return to the identity. The loop is supposed to be the identity, essentially.
Yes, so what I was about to show is that we're going to put something like the Ishibashi states, which is a conformally invariant boundary state at that hole. And essentially, a hole can always be mapped to a long cylinder. So if this circle is the hole, you can always map it to a very long cylinder, and that will project to the vacuum state, and it will close up the hole. So you might have said I could have inserted any state that contains a vacuum, but the point is those wouldn't be conformally invariant, whereas the Ishibashi state will be. But this is getting a little bit ahead of my slides, but it's totally okay. So as I said, this whole rest of the talk is to justify all the words I just said. So I'll start with talking about what is the Hilbert space of a CFT. Now, what's special about CFT is that despite what I said in the first slide, that a generic QFT has no notion of a local Hilbert space, a CFT has precisely that. In fact, it was probably the first thing that one learns in a textbook about a CFT, which is the operator state correspondence. As we said, we can prepare a state by doing the path integral on a long cylinder that ends on this circle, that prepares a state in the circle. If I don't do anything funny in this infinite n, this is just evolution by e to the minus beta h, and it projects to the vacuum state. But because this is a conformally invariant theory, I can map this cylinder to a disk. And then whatever boundary condition I choose here at the infinite n will become an operator inserted at the middle, at a puncture. And this is how we define the primary or the highest weight state of my Hilbert space. So this is like the state that is annihilated by all the annihilation operators from which we build up the entire representation of either, say, the Virasoro algebra, or in this case, I'm going to assume a Kasputi algebra. All that means is I'm going to assume the presence of a conserved current, conserved holomorphic current, J of Z. And I can define the modes of this current by just taking this Laurent integral here. I do this integral along this red circle here, and it gives me all these modes. And I should think about the modes with negative mode number as a creation operator. So the states are built by taking my primary state, labeled by I, and applying the creation operators defined by these modes. And these modes satisfy an infinite dimensional algebra that's called the Kac-Moody algebra. And in fact, there are two copies of them, one for the right moving, one for the left moving modes. Now, why is this important? I said earlier that we have an infinite dimensional Hilbert space, which may seem difficult and unnatural from a certain point of view of quantum information theory. But what's helpful in a CFT is that we have also an infinite dimensional symmetry. The infinite dimensional symmetry makes it possible to classify all the states as representations. And in fact, for an RCFT, you will have only finitely many representations of this chiral algebra. Now, what's important about this Hilbert space, as I said earlier, is it's local. This Hilbert space is defined about any puncture on a general surface. So for example, if I had this three-hold sphere, there's a Hilbert space around this circle, around that circle, and that circle. So there are three Hilbert spaces here. And in fact, this pair of Pence geometry tells us how the Hilbert space is split and fused. To be very precise, we should choose a conformal frame. So I'm going to choose this geometry where one puncture is at 0, the second one is at z, and one is essentially at infinity. And then this cohorism, remember, is a linear map. It's a linear map between the Hilbert space at I and j into the Hilbert space at k. And once we fix this geometry, we have an expression for this linear map, at least the coefficients. This cijk is precisely the thing that appears in the three-point function of a CFT. In fact, this whole thing on the right-hand side is the three-point function of the CFT with punctures at 0, z, and infinity. Now, we can do the same with a CFT with boundary. Now we introduce an interval that has endpoints, which are labeled by boundary conditions. And we can map that to half of a disk with some operator inserted in the middle. And that now defines our primary state. It's exactly the same thing, except these boundary operators have extra labels for the boundary conditions. And now we can define more precisely these cobordisms. For example, this pair of Pence diagram that for open strings that fuses intervals, we should map it to the upper half plane and with punctures, ijk, located at 0, x, and infinity. And then in that frame, the cobordism is a linear map given by these OPE coefficients that tells us what happens when I bring these two points on the boundary close together. Similarly, we have, for the zipper cobordism, a geometry of the upper half plane, where the circle, the state on the circle is inserted in the bulk at a point z, and the state of on the boundary is inserted at a point on the boundary. And you see the difference between this, say, and TQFT is that the cobordisms have some parameter, x and z. There is some non-trivial dependence on the geometry. So I mentioned the primary state here on the boundary, but I didn't mention the full Hilbert space. To talk about that, I'm going to mention something called the unfolding trick. So remember that these are conformally invariant boundary conditions. So what does that mean? It means in terms of the stress tensor of a theory that if I consider the stress tensor and I look at along a real slice, T of z is equal to T bar of z bar. And I'm going to assume for this talk that the same is true for my Kac-Moody current, that J of z is also related to J bar of z bar. So I'm relating the right moving and the left moving copies at the real line. What this allows me to do is do an unfolding where this upper half plane with with J and J bar can be unfolded into just the whole plane with J defined everywhere. And so this is it's a choice of analytic continuation of J of Z into the lower half plane. But what this means is that all the open string objects, like the open string pair of Pants, can be unfolded into a closed string-like thing. And in particular, these generators of my symmetry, which in the open string language is written in terms of the left and right movers, can be combined to a single left moving or right moving expression. And this, if you unpack it, say for a free boson, and write z as exponential of I omega, this is just saying that I can take plane waves and combine them into standing waves. And now all of my states unfold into a single representation of a chiral algebra. So those are the Hilbert spaces of my theory that we want to factorize. Any questions so far? So Benny, just to confirm, so when should I end at in
10 is 5 minutes question.
Okay. All right, so I want to at least get through. So I described my Hilbert space. At least I want to tell you that I think we do have a definition of this boundary condition that closes up holes. So I'm going to describe that now. So we described earlier the conformally invariant boundary condition defined by the condition on the stress tensor. I should say also one way to interpret this is to say that no momentum flows out of the boundary. And I want to define this entanglement brain boundary condition in the closed string channel. What I mean is that if I consider this open string moving in a loop, it has boundary conditions A and B. I want to characterize them by treating this diagram as an amplitude between states on this circle into the states on the bigger circle. If I do that, then the conformally invariant boundary condition translates into this equation, where the L's are the Virasoro generators. And there are known bases of solutions called the Ishibashi state. They are these entangled states between the left and right moving parts of the CFT, labeled by a bulk primary field H. And I want to propose that what we call the entanglement brain boundary condition is really just the Ishibashi state in the vacuum sector. In particular, it satisfies this condition we said earlier, that if I take any manifold, a CFT on any manifold, and I put a hole due to an entangling surface of size epsilon, when that hole goes to zero size, the bulk correlation functions are recovered. And the reason is very simple. This is a conformally invariant state. This is the whole point of a conformally invariant boundary condition. So I'm free to apply conformal boundary condition, conformal maps. And a small hole can always be mapped to a very long cylinder. And that's a very long time evolution. That long time evolution will project into the lowest state here. And the lowest state when I choose H equal to zero is really the vacuum. And so I'm able to close up the hole. Now, what's interesting about this boundary condition, as I said earlier, is that it's not a single local boundary condition. It's actually sum of local ones. So how do we see that? So we're gonna apply this, Cardy condition, which is one of the Sewing relations. It's the only Sewing relations we'll discuss. What does it say? It says that what I said earlier about identifying an open string diagram with a closed string amplitude, it's true, I can always say this, but if I just choose arbitrary states A and B on these closed circles here, I'm not guaranteed that I can write it as a trace over a Hilbert space. Why is that? Because if I can really treat this as a trace over this open string Hilbert space, then this thing, it looks like a sum over Boltzmann factors with integer coefficients, right? If I'm tracing over Hilbert space, the degeneracies are integers. But if I choose these spaces arbitrarily, there's no guarantee that I can always write this amplitude as a trace. And one of the Sewing relations that I put up there was called the Cardy condition, and is precisely imposing this fact. It requires that these states are really giving us a bona fide open string partition function. And if you do that, that's a very strong constraint on what these states can be. And so for simple theories like RCFTs, you can find them. And they give you a complete set of local boundary conditions, local from the point of view of the open string. And particularly for RCFT, the Ishibashi state, which is also a basis, must be related to the Cardy states, which satisfy this physical boundary condition by some unitary rotation. And these are the particular coefficients in that relation. These are from the S matrix of the CFT. As you can see that the Ishibashi state is a sum of a local boundary conditions. Now, the simplest example I can give for that is the case of a free compact boson. So this is a boson filled with a periodicity 2 pi r in the target space. And now our E-brain will be just a vacuum Ishibashi state, which, similar to this formula, is a sum, it's an integral, in fact, over Cardi states labeled by some Dirichlet bounding condition. So what phi epsilon is, if I have some surface with a hole and I impose Dirichlet bounding conditions on my scalar field phi, that value of phi is precisely what's labeling my Cardi states. This sum over the boundary values there is very natural for two reasons. One is that if I imagined, first of all, this scalar field has a shift invariance. This is a free theory where I can shift phi by any constant, and the action will be invariant. But if I fixed phi, that's not invariant under shifting. If I fixed phi the boundary, then I've destroyed my shift invariance, and I've changed my theory in a drastic way. The integral over phi naturally restores that shift invariance. Another way to see this is natural is that if I did the Euclidean path integral without this hole there, I should certainly sum over the values of phi at that hole. I should sum over all fluctuations. And now we're saying the entangling surface should not change the path integral, should not change the state. And as I promised earlier, this Ishibashi state is going to give us not a single boundary conditions, but a sum. So we should really think that now there's a sum over superselection sectors. So when I factorize the state on a circle, it splits into a sum over different sectors labeled by this Dirichlet bounding condition. Now, this sum over Dirichlet bounding conditions has a consequence for the entropy. This is a precise version of what I was saying earlier about factorizing the vacuum state. I'm going to do it for the free boson exactly. So you see, I've defined my factorized state by doing this sequence of cobordisms. And I know that at the end, I'm going to get this diagram with E-brain bounding conditions to tell me that I should sum over Dirichlet bounding conditions. This diagram is equivalent to this sort of macaroni diagram. And because it's a CFT, I need to insert some length scale. So there's a small size of the circle epsilon, and there's a big semicircle with radius lambda. And I can really actually compute this path integral for a free boson. And it will be useful for that purposes to map this to a rectangle by using the log function. I'm going to actually compute this diagram and see what the factorized state is. The first thing I'm going to do is to expand my scalar field in those coordinates on the rectangle. And you see something very natural, which is these boundary conditions, phi epsilon and phi lambda, are encoded in the zero mode of this expansion. So the dot, dot, dots are the oscillators. They tell you how this scalar field will fluctuate on these intervals. Those are the sines and cosines. The zero modes are just linearly related to the boundary conditions I chose at the this entangling surface and this larger entangling surface. So how do I compute this path integral? Because it's a free theory, basically I just compute the on-shell action here. This is my factorized state with amplitude determined by the on-shell exponential of the on-shell action. So one comment I would make here is, you see, here I have a state defined on one interval and a state defined on the other interval. And how do I know that this state really came from the circle? So the geometry of the circle comes entirely from the entanglement structure of these states because I see that these states are labeled by my boundary values, phi lambda, phi epsilon. But the phi epsilon is correlated with, it has to match with the phi epsilon here, and the phi lambda has to match with the phi lambda here. That's just saying that the boundary conditions on the entangling surface here have to match, and over that to match. So that's how I know that this state came from the circle. The punchline of this slide is that there's actually an extra bit of entropy that comes from this entanglement of the boundary conditions. It comes if I take the trace of the density matrix. If I use this formula to compute the trace of the density matrix, I find a zero mode part, which is the integral over the zero modes, which really comes from the integral over phi epsilon and phi lambda. And that zero mode integral leads to an extra bit of entropy. When I compute the entropy between these two intervals, there is a subleading term. This was noticed by Michel and Strudnitsky. And it gives you sort of a consequence of this entanglement boundary condition. So,
I guess you should start rushing.
Yeah, I should, yeah. So what do I want to say? I mean, I could just conclude here almost, but let me say one more thing, which is that in general, so I showed you for how to factorize for a free boson, but I want to say that the hard work that we did was to show that you can do this in general. In general, you have this factorization diagram, which you can unfold into a closed string kind of pair of pants. And the point is that back in the 90s, people studied this diagram and sort of showed how you can take the Kac-Moody current Jn on this circle and factorize the current into a tensor product of the J's on these two circles. So instead of factorizing the states, I factorize my Kac-Moody algebra. But that's the same as factorizing the states because all our states are created from the vacuum by the Kac-Moody currents, by the negative modes. So there was some additional work there. And because I've already taken up quite a bit of time, I'm just going to end here. Just to summarize that we propose that there is an extension of the two-dimensional CFT incorporating the boundary condition we call E-brain, and that this boundary condition allows you to factorize the CFT as we described. And I want to suggest that this gives a natural definition of a tensor network for CFT. So I'll end here. No, but I mean, you don't have to, but I think that the 2-to-2 scattering operators are the so-called disentangler in the CMERA network. And you could ask the same question. So CMERA is supposed to be something like RG. In the traditional formulation of RG, you think about coarse graining, but you don't think about disentangling. So MERA is supposed to be like in some kind of improvement or some new perspective on RG where you disentangle first and then coarse grain. So I would think that the motivation would be also along those lines.
Okay, so my question sounds a little bit mean, but it isn't. So let me quote my condensed matter physicist, Philip Stamm, quoting Richard Feynman.
Oh, okay.
So a theory is not a theory before you've gotten a number out of it.
Uh-huh.
So what numbers do you think are in range? Or I mean, are you going after numbers? Are you going after cut?
I can show you the numbers. These are the numbers for, you can compute these Cij, Cijks for certain theories. And in fact, they have to solve crossing symmetry. So these are numbers. And I gave you an ansatz for tensors. So the CMERA is supposed to be a variational ansatz. I just gave you infinite dimensional tensors to put into your ansatz. And you would say, well, I can't do infinite dimensional tensors.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. I'll say just truncate them. And I think maybe this is the wrong thing to do, but maybe it doesn't give you a good approximation to your CFT state. I'm not sure. But I think these are really numbers. These are certainly numbers.
Good. Okay. More in the coffee break.
Okay, okay.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
So let's say in the context of holographic CFT, let's say especially in the boundary CFT, like those proposals by the Tapanogi and so on, there is this brain on the entropy and so on, this boundary contributions. So this E-brain thing, are they related to this construction? Or?
I think so. In fact, I had a picture of their picture. So Takinagi had these pictures. So Takeni had these pictures describing the boundary. Well,
but
yeah.
In your construction, it sounds like the E brain is somehow given, but in this context, the brain could carry the tension. So it's not like there's some parameter you can choose.
Well, the extension. Well, I'm just giving the CFT side, right?
Yeah.
The CFT side, I'm putting a sum over Cardi condition, Cardi boundary conditions.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah.
Which brain or which tension?
I don't know enough about that formalism, but I think that I'm using everything I said is within the data of the boundary CFT, of the CFT living at the boundary of the ADS CFT.
Mm-hmm.
So if Takinagi has an ADS B CFT correspondence, by definition, that must include a correspondence of what a Cardi condition or a physical boundary condition gets mapped to.
Only, like, only thing you can have, like,
it doesn't have to be unique. I'm just saying Ishibashi state is a convenient choice. There could be many others. I agree. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.